G'day, listeners. Welcome to Bar Karate, the sailing podcast. My name is Jordan Spencer. It's that time of the week where I get to hang out with some really cool people and my two idiot mates. First up, joining us is Mr. Brett Perry.
Greetings, exalted one.
Nothing heard there. I'm not sure what's going on. I might cut to the other bloke, see if he knows what's going on.
He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr.
Mr. Nick Bice, what happened there?
Two times in 2 weeks. Crickets, mate.
What's going on?
Another medical emergency has taken place. Oh. BP's had to rush his wife to the dentist. I may be exaggerating this a little bit, but just for story's purposes. And I was just texting with him this morning and saying, well, at what time do you have to go? 2:30? And he's like, no, in half an hour. No, really, 2:30. No, in half an hour. And then he finally got onto it. I've been practicing my dad jokes being in full lockdown here in SA, which we've just gone into, 6 days of solid lockdown, not allowed to leave the house.
Mm.
And as you know, I'm a bit of a fan of disruption. And despite, of course, the tragedies that's happened with the COVID and people losing their life and what have you, but the minute it was announced by the SA Premier, the bottle shops were chock-a-block. I tell you, if we had our Bar Karate Sailor's Lager selling off the side of the road, which we do, we would have sold every case.
In seconds.
You should have seen it. There were dudes there just walking out with Southern Comfort, Midori, like just anything that they could get their hands on. And it's a 6 day lockdown, but the bottle shops are open.
It is really an interesting sort of dichotomy when you look at, I guess the US, so I'll sort of pick on the US a little bit here, the US treatment and the Australian treatment. So 17 people in Australia in Adelaide show signs, so immediate lockdown. In the US, everyone runs over and buys toilet paper. In Australia, everyone runs to the grog shop and gets buys the grog shop out. You know, it's hilarious. It's just, I guess it's just the nature of the beast. But, enjoy.
Really, I only got 17 cartons into the back of the Land Rover, but that's all right.
That's why everyone buys a van in Australia so you can load up for the grog. Oh, dear. All right, well.
And just a quick one, apologies for last week. Had our own little medical emergency. Got back from the bash, the kids were a bit sick, one was a bit sicker than the others, and it just turned into a bit of one of those evenings. So apologies for that, first one I've missed, and I tell you, I feel as though someone cut off my left leg. But I wish they did cut off my left leg, because after the Variety Club bash, I tell you, I've got some gout. So just a quick one on the Variety Club bash and with our mate Snowdy and Kaelin and Mido and the girls that supported us, although it was a bit of a guilty pleasure travelling around the state, having such a fantastic time, but raised $1.5 million.
For kids.
For underprivileged kids in SA. So that was massive. And it was a bit of a show of hands at the end of the night for all the virgins, the first timers, of which myself and Carlin were.
Yep.
And it was a definite resounding yes, we'll be back.
Wow. And big congratulations on winning the best team as well, I noticed. I saw a little trophy photo.
We won
photo.
The, as voted by our peers, all the other bashes, and voted by the organisation.
I'm intrigued to what that means.
Snowdy's done 15 bashes, right?
Oh,
and there's a few tricks to kind of winning. One is bribery.
Yep.
You just bribe your way through everything.
Yep.
The other one is hijacking, and they have these things called fun stops. And essentially you stop on the side of the road and they either serve you, you know, there was like a Wimbledon theme. So they served you strawberries and cream, for example. But essentially, we were bash disease control. So we were loaded up with little backpacks, 10-litre kegs on our back full of gin and tonic. And every time someone stopped, we would get the kegs out or we would do bash disease control and we would kind of wave people in and park right in front of the people who were organising the fun stop and essentially claim as much as we could. But it was a big win for Snowdy on his 15th and, a great introduction for us.
Yeah.
Loved it.
I will just say for listeners wondering about alcohol and driving, it is an amazing event.
Strict,
Strictly controlled.
No drink driving.
Yeah, police involved. Everyone in the community is behind this thing because it does such an amazing coverage. It's quite a tradition in Australia. So, yeah, don't have any concerns about that. All right. So everything's above board, but a lot of fun is had. Yeah, fair enough. Congratulations, by the way. Good work.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Awesome. Speaking of good work, we have some pretty full bore guests this week. We've put a lot of thought into this episode. We wanted this episode really badly because for any listeners out there who want to know about the business of professional sailing, those who want to run a pro team or want to be a pro, we reached out to what we consider the best run team in the world. At the moment, there may be a better one day, but right now we think this is the best run team in the world, and we wanted to understand how it all works. Critically, you will start to understand from this session that sponsorship's not just about getting some media coverage. So the team we're talking to is 11th Hour Racing, and they came about and exist to create change. Their job is, their goal is to make our oceans healthier. So with that being said, we're joined by the co-founder and president, Mr. Rob McMillan, and the grant program director, Michelle Cunnivale. So, team, welcome to Barcarati.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Just first, straight off the bat, Rob, long-time yachty, so I kind of expect you would know what Barcarati is, the term Barcarati.
Of course,
Michelle, do you have any clue what the term Barcarati means?
No.
So essentially, after a day out on the water, all the boats come back, tie their boats up, head up to the yacht club bar and start performing bar karate, kind of waving your hands around liberally, saying, you went that way, I went this way. So that is how bar karate is formed.
Nice.
So welcome aboard.
Thank you. That's awesome.
I'm glad Michelle got that definition from you because she believes it. She would not have believed me if I
asked her. Who's talking shit to me now?
All right.
Thank you for that.
I'm just going to read the mission statement. So 11th Hour Racing establishes strategic partnerships within the sailing and maritime communities to promote collaborative, systematic change benefiting the health of our ocean 1 degree at a time. So how did 11th Hour Racing come about?
Well, that's a good question. And the mission statement is a wordy way of saying we're trying to use the sport of sailing as a platform to talk about ocean health. You know, sport is something that all over the globe people relate to. And way back, you know, more than a decade ago, sailing with my other co-founders, Jeremy Pochman and Wendy Schmidt, we were trying to get through the barrier of having people learn about ocean health related issues and make it more relatable. And just somewhat on a lark said, well, why don't we use sailing? Why don't we try to transform the sport of sailing and make sailors advocates for ocean health? Because we're all using it for sport or, you know, just as a pastime or professional thing. It's a perfectly natural sport to talk about these issues. And it seems like a genuine attempt. So we said, let's not sell widgets or sneakers or insurance. Let's start talking and, you know, selling sustainability and ocean health instead of these tangible goods and try to have a paradigm shift. So it's sort of the idea started in 2008, 2009 and has somewhat exploded since then.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I have been I should actually just give a tiny, tiny CV element just so you know. So Rob is a sailor, a pro sailor, and also was former owner of Hood Sails, former owner of Quantum Sails, and now onto Doyle's. So I'm assuming you buy North's next.
Well, no, hang on. It started with Shore Sails. So if you want to go, the lineage was Shore to Quantum to Hood. Hood still is around, and then and Doyle.
Yeah.
Here in Newport, I've got a great partnership with my partners here in Doyle.
Yeah, yeah, great.
And so Kenny's knocking on your door. Grab your neck.
Yeah, it's a long dance, and we'll get into the dance later. But one of my best friends and one of our largest grantees is Kenny's brother, Brad. So It's a wonderful dinner conversation that I get to have.
Oh, dear.
Bloody moose. Jesus.
And Michelle is a scientist, I guess, is the best way to describe Michelle. So Bachelor of Science in Marine Ecology from Cornell. Wow. MBA and a Master's in Marine Affairs, Coastal Management from the University of Rhode Island. So Michelle basically is somebody that likes to hang out at universities and get on the grog. So perfect for the sailing side. But has had quite a bit of time working in the state of Rhode Island, making change in and around the coastal management plans, and has a real expertise in offshore wind energy development, which I'm really interested in. That's one thing I quite love. So I just needed to get that out there just so you understood everything. So then, Rob, we'll come back to you just to pull that back in. So the 11th hour thing, as you said, just blew up.
Yeah, I mean, it was a small attempt within the, you know, our parent network, the Schmidt family network. There's a lot of work being done on ocean health and energy and human rights and agriculture and how the world really is one big global system. The ocean is the biggest part of that system and arguably the least understood. And sailors have always been sort of the at the forefront of touching the ocean more so than the rest of society. So we started small with some grants to local organizations and a sponsorship of all things, a J24 team. Wow. With an idea of, you know, a lot of environmental efforts that we had seen were grassroots, on the ground, feel-good stories. And there was very little done from the top where winning and performance were showcased with sustainability. And our whole objective was to show that, you know, being sustainable wasn't a sacrifice. In fact, we wanted to make it seem like a performance advantage if we could in areas where we can make improvements. And I hate to say top down, but that's sort of the way of doing it. You know, for better or worse, the people that are winning events or winning any sporting thing have a bigger microphone, you know, and they're the leaders and they're the people that, you know, at least in our sport, we're a bunch of lemmings. You know, whatever rope people use, whatever sails people use, whatever shoes, yada, 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 we follow. So the thought process early on was to work with the best in the sport and then have that be examples that they could translate and then bridge to the grassroots efforts via grants so that we could talk about tangible things rather than, you know, pie in the sky if we only could. You know, we wanted real examples. And that's where, you know, Michelle's side with grants and thing organizations like Sail Newport are working with kids and doing education and so on. So the first one was a J24 World Championship in Malmo, and I think 2010. I was just going to say that was Tim Healy and John Mollicone, and they went out and won. And we're like, oh wow,
good one.
Great.
Touched.
Cool.
Touched.
So before we actually get into like the super duper details, how do you get involved here, Michelle, as a scientist?
That's a great question.
We needed a smart person.
Yeah, that's fair.
No, but actually, I worked for a grantee of 11th Hour Racing 5-6 years ago. So when I worked on climate change policy in Rhode Island and helping businesses in Newport adapt to sea level rise, 11th Hour Racing was one of our funders. And so I first learned about the organization as a grantee and helping to work on those local solutions to these big global problems. And I jumped at the chance to work for the organization as the grant program director. Mm.
So. With the smarts, you know what they say, when a kid said, when I grow up, I want to be a sailor. No, sorry, you can't do both.
You're doing all the old jokes this morning, aren't you, boss? That's good.
Yeah, breaking them out.
For the listeners, Bicey and I, you know, with the Boatyard involvement, we've been heavily involved with 11th Hour as a group working. And I do want to say this, one of the things they kept us accountable in the Boatyard, for one. We went to them because we were really happy to try and work in the ways that we could to learn more. And one of the things that led is that 11th Hour in the ocean race did, at every stopover, were organising events for businesses and the community to talk about how to be more efficient, how to do things differently, how to recycle, how to look at what your business is doing. And that's just grown and grown and grown. And that piece for me was just an eye-opener. And it changed a lot of things we did in the boatyard, but it also led on to, you know, these amazing summits that are now happening all around the world. Can we talk about those?
The summits themselves? Yeah. Mm. I mean, we, you know, thanks for bringing up the boatyard. We're trying really hard with the stopovers and anything we're involved with to do, as I was saying before, some tangible stuff on the ground. And some of that is waste management. And some of that is, like, you know, just bringing people reusable bottles rather than individual bottles. The summits, you know, around the big marine events, which, you know, was the Volvo Ocean Race, now the Ocean Race, or something like the Vendée Globe or the, you know, the America's Cup, when they were having the World Series events, were to do summits to get scientists and educators and local NGOs and government officials together to talk about global issues and local issues and to try to work towards solutions. And, you know, in the past 10 years, which is a nice timeline for, you know, the existence of 11th Hour Racing, I've noticed in the sailing community, there has been a shift in people's thinking about ocean health. Sailors are now okay to talk about it without feeling like they need to go hug a polar bear or a tree or something. You know, it's part of our culture where it really wasn't before. And I think the summits are a great way of bringing that out, because I've yet to come across a sailor who's like, we need more plastic in the ocean. There's not enough mining. There's not enough, you know, we need more waste in the ocean. No. And it seems basic, but that those, you know, summits really do coalesce a lot of people. And it's amazing the connections that come out of it, which is sort of a role we were trying to play anyway. We're not, you know, we don't have one solution for ocean problems, but as a community, as a global community, we have better insight and better available solutions. So the summits, as they travel around and the races travel around, can bring people together. And, you know, that leads for grant opportunities for us, or it leads for connections between, you know, different governmental groups and whatnot. And that's, I think we're starting to see a bit of change, a sea change. In our
you got Boyce's disease.
I needed
you're welcome. Now, well, there's certainly no doubt that the awareness factor, like you say, 10 years ago it was almost a taboo subject to talk about, because we're all doing things and building boats and knowing that we were polluting in one form or another. And it was almost that taboo subject to anyone to speak about, especially building composite boats. Mm-hmm. But now it's a common discussion, and it's probably one of the top discussions that come up the minute you start talking about putting a campaign on the ground or getting that campaign off the ground, for that matter.
It's true. Actually, probably it started, I don't know if you guys know, have you ever heard the name Ian Kiernan? Do you guys know that name? Ian Kiernan,
Clean Up Australia.
He was a round the world sailor. Ian Kiernan, Australian, and he started the Clean Up Australia. Now it's gone international, and that started 30 odd years ago. And he did that because he was doing around the world sailing. I think it was doing a race, and he noticed the amount of plastic in the ocean, and that inspired him to do that. So sailors do lead the way on this. So the question obviously then becomes, Michelle, are you a sailor?
No, I'm not. I taught like marine science on sailboats and on the water.
Right.
And so that's where I'm much more of a casual recreational.
No problems. I'm building to something here. Oh, I'm always building to something.
Champagne on the poop deck.
Yeah.
So the standout vessel in the whole program, of course, is what you're doing with Charlie and Mark with the Imoca 60 that you've got, and there's a new one under build, I still believe. We'll come to that. Have you been for a spin on the Imoca 60, Michelle?
No, not yet.
Right.
I was on their last boat, on their last campaign, but not yet on the Imoca.
Right, right.
I've heard it's rough. I've heard it's a rough ride.
And how about you, Rob? Did you manage to get out when the boys were in town? Or the boys?
Yeah, it was great. As much as I love offshore sailing, I'm really, really happy I'm not sailing that boat.
What's that?
Boy. It's it's not a place I'd want to be with five other individuals.
Crazy.
In a little cave slamming around. It's wild. I'm really excited about that platform. I think it's the Amoka class has done a brilliant job of, you know, growing and stabilizing it. And it's obviously the best game in town. There's 30 some odd boats right now sailing mm-hmm. single-handed. Yep. But no.
Just but violent. Okay. Yeah, even watching some really of the violent. Videos now during the Vonda and seeing Alex trying to record in front of the camera and he's moving all over the joint and the boat's just crashing and he's sailing in 15 knots of brace.
Yeah. It's wild. They are fast. I've never been on a boat that feels like it has an unlimited top end. With each knot of speed, it feels like it'll just keep accelerating and the writing moment keeps going up. It's wild. The faster you go, the faster it feels like it wants to go.
Yeah. So just quickly, off subject, did Charlie get North Sails on the boat or you managed to keep the door stuff on?
You know, we promised to remain agnostic and, interestingly enough, the our sort of technological partner in Mayor Concept, which is Francois Gomez, they're really ingrained with North Sails in France.
Yep.
And so for that go around for this boat, they've gone that way. But, you know, everything's open. We're just going to make the fastest campaign we can. I'll say it that way.
Yeah.
Well, I reckon the way we'll roll this is I might go more into the Grant side initially and then we'll come back to the team and the boat and what's happening. So, but first off, Michelle, I just want to try and pick up and can you just explain how the whole relationship works from a Grant's perspective? So in my mind, if you look at it from the outside, the whole 11th Hour Racing is the team, the Amoka boat, but there's so much more going on, absolutely so much more. So can you just tell us about that?
Sure, definitely. So 11th Hour Racing, we have like three different areas of engagement, three different program areas. And so sponsorship, Nick, as you mentioned, is really our biggest and our flashiest. And that's really meant to kind of use the platform of sailing, the athletes as spokespeople, you know, really being this messenger to raise awareness and change practices within the sailing industry and the maritime industry. But we also have the grant program, which is really more traditional philanthropy, where you're giving funds and, you know, kind of seed funding to these really innovative local solutions that are trying to advance better practices and solutions at the local level to these global problems. And so we work internationally, and so our grant making is international, and we have grantees all around the world. And some are very small and some are very large, but all with this idea of local solutions to global problems. And then we also have an ambassador program, which is kind of like this really neat mix of the two programs. And it's where we partner with professional sailors, you know, from all different countries, or like marine industry professionals who are really leaders in their community. And we work with them to support a project that they're really passionate about, whether it's, you know, trying to work on an electric coach boat, or if it's educating their local community on single-use plastics or how to get restaurants to switch away from single-use plastics, or if it's you know, working on a documentary series around ocean health issues. We try to work with ambassadors who can be really powerful change makers within their community, whether that's a coastal community or their team or the company that they work for, or just really being those champions to foster more ocean stewardship in communities around the world. So I manage our grant program, and we have done so many different things. It's grown as well over the years. I think, you know, we've given out hundreds of grants. Any given year, we're doing around 40 to 50 grants. They're really inspiring. They're all about people trying to do better and to create change. And that's really, it gives you a lot of optimism for the future.
Hey, Michelle, Have you ever heard of USAFE? And it's an electric life buoy.
That must be the worst part of your job. You must get hit like that all the time.
Yeah. No,
it truly is inspiring, and just the whole grant side, how many people that must touch is could, like, globally is phenomenal.
I just want to talk over on that. In that, I like my when you imagine a racing team, they work their ass off to get sponsorship to go racing. You don't imagine a team has then sets aside a whole bunch of money to actually do this sort of stuff. But this is the activation process, which is probably one of the major parts when you're building a professional team. You need to think of this sort of stuff. And so that's how it works. There'd be a sailing budget, and then there's this budget, isn't there?
Well, for the team there is, yeah. Yep. There is, you know, one of the things we wanted to make sure we did with the grant program is we've got
Separate whole thing.
Yeah, but within the context of the team, mm-hmm. One of the things that we wanted to make sure we did was have a legacy wherever we went. So we have a legacy grant project. So every place that the team visits, we invest money into that area, into some, you know, NGO or nonprofit that is working on a local issue, and trying to listen to what the issues are, because for better or worse, there's lots of problems for us to address. And we want to make it, you know, personal to the local community. So the team helps find who that is going to be. Michelle ends up working with, you know, whomever the leaders are, and then try to build upon that and see if there's a project that we can help fix. For lack of a better way of saying it, we're trying to raise awareness. We're trying to have paradigm shift in behavior. Some of it's just trying to fix problems. Yeah. And some of the problems are really big, but a lot of them are smaller. And the 1 degree at a timeline that's in our mission statement is just like a boat. Like, you're here, you want to go over there. You can't just go there. Yeah, you have to do it. Yeah. In a process base, you know, and it's, we took that analogy from sailing in a very purposeful way. Yes. And the grants are the bedrock for that, for sure.
So obviously grants involves money, but also the education, right? So to get from that, all that through those 1 degrees, you help create the pathway or establish the pathways to make sure that they're not trying to jump from A to Z. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's a fair way to say it. I think we try to avoid, for a lot of groups, doing general funding, and we do project-based funding that are, and Michelle can speak to this, but our goal is to have a predetermined time of engagement with a particular group, you know, where we're not just a perpetual funder. That is great for certain groups, but for our group, it's, you've got an objective, you want to get to the end of it, like a race, you want to start the race and win the race. We want the project, and if that leads to something else, great, but it's a way to move the ball forward rather than just sort of sit in quicksand. And you know, and nonprofits, especially now in the current world environment, they have a hard go of it, but we still need to move, like, certain objectives forward. And the best way to do that is to have a goal, you know, rather than, oh, we need ocean health. Well, that's every time we say it, I laugh, my head explodes. I'm like, I don't even know what the hell that means. It's so big. It's such a big topic. But the local groups have a good idea of what is bothering them. And Michelle does a great, great job of, you know, drifting through that minefield, because a lot of people say, as you just did, hey, I've got this great idea, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's so central, though, to our approach, that this idea that Rob shared about really wanting to see tangible impacts. Like, you can fund a lot of things that talk about the problem, that study the problem, and, like, what's unique about 11th Hour Racing and our grant making is that we're really focused on outcomes and creating impact now. And it's kind of baked into our name. Like, people often ask, where did the name 11th Hour Racing come from? And obviously, like, the 11th hour is this sense of urgency, right? Like, we are at a point where we need to start acting now, and before it's too late, before we can't go back, before the oceans are changed forever and we can't return to a better state. And so this sense of urgency really does drive our grant making and trying to find projects that, while they're local, can be a solution that can be replicated in other coastal communities or other industries more broadly.
Mm-hmm. What's been one of the greatest or biggest impacts from one of your grants that you've put out?
Oh, there's a lot. Like I was trying to think of like, oh, what would be the top three that I should talk about? But there, honestly, there's so many. And I wanted to focus just on 2020, actually, because this year has been so challenging. But our grantees, I mean, they work so hard and they are so passionate about these issues that they've been able to accomplish amazing things despite the challenges of 2020 and the pandemic. So like one of our, you know, key grantees that Rob's mentioned is Sail Newport in, you know, our hometown of Newport, Rhode Island. We have been working with them for years and years and starting off with very small grants, then helping to support their new education facility, which is just like this amazing, beautiful space that was sustainably built and is run on renewable energy. And now they have a program where every fourth grader in the city of Newport during their school day is able to go out on Narragansett Bay on the water to learn about the local ecosystem, to learn how to sail, regardless of their economic background and regardless of, you know, their socioeconomic status. They're able to now connect. For many of these kids, and this is true in communities around the world, like they live, you know, a few feet from the water. Like they can see the water, but they have no relationship with it. And so fostering these opportunities for kids, regardless of their economic background or their racial, you know, makeup, that they have opportunities to love the water and to then want to take care of it into the future. So those success stories are, there's many of those. And those are really touching to me because, you know, those are real people. Those are real kids with real, where our funding is having a big impact. But then there's also projects that are big and global, like the Urban Water Challenge. This is a design challenge that we funded for 2-3 years now. And it's all focused on new innovations, startups from around the world that are tackling water issues, whether it's drinking water, how to get access to clean drinking water, how to deal with sea level rise, how to conserve clean drinking water, as well as reduce the amount of pollution into local waterways from like wastewater facilities. And so this year we just awarded the grand prize to a company in the Netherlands called Field Factors. And basically they're taking rainwater that is flooding the streets, collecting it, filtering it and cleaning it up and allowing it then to be used to water public parks, green spaces. They're using that water in stadiums like football or soccer stadiums and taking a problem, which is like too much water in coastal cities and allowing it to be reused. And then there's so many success stories. I don't want to like go on and on, but another one that Rob and I are super passionate about is a local composting effort. So a lot of times people are like, why is an ocean related funder funding composting? Mm. Like what is the connection there? But healthy soils are so important to ocean health. Mm. And this is something that we're really trying to raise awareness to. Healthy soils not only help draw carbon out of the atmosphere, but they also help to support, you know, local food, but also retain rainwater. There's so many benefits. And by creating more composting locally, we're diverting waste from the landfill where it's rotting and producing methane and contributing to climate change. And instead, we're creating healthy soil, which does the exact opposite. It sucks carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and stores it in the ground. And ultimately, it's those types of solutions that we want to see be replicated in coastal communities around the world.
Wow, that's very cool. Oh, and just from a habits perspective, Bossy and I were involved in the Ocean Summit in Genoa last year, which you guys have partnered up with. And we were doing the... we ran the thing around boat building, and in that room, which was all about ways to be more sustainable, there was the CEO of B&G. There was quite a few boat builders from the IMOCA teams that were there. There were fibre manufacturers that were there. There were resin manufacturers that were there. There was a range of boat builders. It was, you know, the industry is definitely there now, you know, like whereas 5 years ago, not a clue. Everything just went into the skip bin. That didn't happen in the boatyard, for example. Nothing went into the skip bin anymore. We looked at, okay, where does that fibre go? How do we recycle that? And that is due to you guys, that pressure that you guys have put on. There's no question, just the relationships that were formed. Not that we're just buffered yachties. That's the thing, you know. We get by on our looks. So... So, you know,
thanks, Matt.
So your programs are having a huge, as you say, degree by degree, but it's happening, you know. And now everyone, the other thing that's happening is that those people are now starting to become promoters. Like if you'd said to me 5 years ago, oh, you'd be trying to make a program to tell people about this stuff, I wouldn't have believed it, you know, because it never crossed, never even thought about it. But actually make it 10 years ago, not 5 years ago. But... So yeah, now your pathway is actually having success at all levels. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a funny thing to be a part of, being both on the 11th hour side and then on the industry side. Sailors are, you know, for better or worse, pretty crafty and good at finding solutions. And I think that one of the objectives we've had is to just start identifying problems, you know, and not demonize people. I think that. In the environmental world, this could be a big global segue anyway, but I don't want to go there, but people are demonizing each other, like somebody's right and somebody's wrong. And that's not really the case, you know, with sustainability or global health. We as a global society, we are where we are because we were developing and evolving and the industrial age happened and whatnot. And now we're like, oh, something bad is happening. Let's work on solutions. And we wanted to stop put the head in the sand or to criticize or call people out. You know, I think that identifying it and saying, let's work on solutions together is the right approach. And then, you know, you get creative minds together and you get leaders of industry and, you know, sailing has access to smart people and people of means, you know, and those people really care. I mean, I've always been baffled that if you think about yacht owners, how much money they spend and how much time they're willing to dedicate to this passion they have, they must have some ethereal connection to the ocean that we've all got. You know, we're all like addicts to it. Let's capitalize on that. Yeah. Let's use that in a positive way. And let's take some of these behaviors home. Most of these people are leaders in the, you know, industrial side of their life, for lack of a better way of saying it. And look up to sailors, despite us being so good looking, they still look up to us. And the grants really do kind of foster it's more than just messaging, you know, messaging is great up to a point, but you know, you're mentioning Mark and Charlie, taking them to a waste site and saying, hey, that's the sandwich you didn't finish. And it's in a pile. And in 4 months time, it's going to be soil rather than producing methane in a landfill and never going away. That's a real thing that we're looking their ambassadors or sponsored groups to talk about. And bring to the community, because again, nobody disagrees that that's a better solution. It's the how, you know, we get to a messaging point and then how, and that's where the grants fit into, well, this is how, and maybe it doesn't work exactly the same way where you guys are, but we don't know until we try. And it's better to try than to just, you know, do this.
I think that's a great point, and having kind of been touched with the whole 11th hour thing, whether it's through the boatyard, through the ocean race, through the summits, even with BP's little X2 talking about the sustainability side or talking about different events. I think there's a bit of an illusion that when it comes to sustainability, that everyone's going to get all this information rammed down their throat. But from my experience working with you guys, we don't have the best We don't even know what the solution is sometimes, but let's all work together to find the solution because it's so customizable. There's so many different variables, whether it's an event or building a boat or putting a boat on a ship. There's just huge amount of variables. And if you work together and have particular guidelines to follow, and just so the awareness is there, and if you tick one of the boxes, that's one step towards it, one step towards making a difference. So, and that's
every step's important. Every little step's important. It really is.
Absolutely.
What about working with groups? So you work with individuals, work with industry. Do you work with government or academia, anything like that? Like, which is, where's your sort of,
academia, yes. Michelle mentioned the University of Rhode Island Graduate School of Oceanography. It's one of the best in the world. And it's, you know, 6 miles from my house in a straight line across the bay, because Rhode Island's about this big.
Yeah.
And they've got a wealth of information. And actually, this is a little bit of a story, so bear with me. But a former professor of Michelle's, who's now retiring, named Dennis Nixon, was teaching there, and he happened to be a client of mine. He had a J-29, one of the best handicap boats out there, and bought sails. And I was putting the Geno on the boat, and we were just BSing. I was like, you know, Dennis, what do you do for a living? And he explained what he did. And he was talking about, you know, URI and the information they have. And they've been doing a continuous drag of Narragansett Bay for, Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong, 50 years or something like that. And he's just telling the story. And he's like, yeah, you know, and the average temperature in Narragansett Bay is up something like 3.5 degrees over that 50 years. And none of the species we're finding in this drag were here 50 years ago. And I would invest in a crab fishery because the biological makeup of Narragansett Bay is similar to what the Chesapeake was 50 years ago.
Wow.
And he just sort of said that like as we're having a beer. Totally, you know, he wasn't selling me anything. And my head kind of blew off my chest, my shoulders, like, what? That's crazy. He's like, oh, yeah, we all know this in science land. Like, all right, well, so how do we take science land and translate it into dumb sailor land? Because that's something that people could, the way he said it was so easygoing. So we try to work with the university partners we have to get the information that is there, that is really dense, that everyone's trying to, like, get a PhD or, you know, tenure or whatever and stupefy it for us, for the, you know, the general population, for lack of a better way of saying it, you know, because not all of us are Michelle that can actually speak that language. So we try to work with that. And then governments are more, you know, we obviously can't fund a government, but they play a crucial role in the intersection of communities. There's no getting around that. So we try to find partners that are able to work with, you know, whatever government officials, and it's easier in smaller communities than it is larger communities, to solve certain problems. Like the Sail Newport education program, those are public school kids, which has a whole different set of rules than a private school would in terms of busing and time out of school. So we're able to use like local government connections to see the greater good, which is not as easy as it always sounds. And then as you get into larger scale politics, which if you guys want to have a whole hour on US politics at some other time, I'm willing to do that. You get into larger politics as other factors at play. And, you know, we're lucky enough in Rhode Island to know a lot of those parties, and a lot of the work that we've done in, you know, what is known as the Ocean State, even though it's a bay, you know, it's a brewery. We get things back all the time here. Because people have a shared love of Narragansett Bay. So we're able to move some things forward and get, you know, trash skimmers, which Michelle can talk about, you know, in local municipalities, which is working with the government, even though we're not directly funding, obviously, the government or working directly with them. So it's more collaborative, and we try to be the hub, you know, our circle logo. We are trying to connect a bunch of different dots in a purposeful way without being as direct as we, you know, you would necessarily be in the business world. That was a long-winded way of saying sort of, by the way.
There's no limits. Hey, Boss, you remember when we were in Newport last time, the environmental police guy? Remember when we were going in the
oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
You'd hate to drop your Chupa Chump wrapper out the window, I tell you.
Yeah,
he was armed to the tilt.
We couldn't believe it. We were stunned. Like this big truck in that had big environmental police, and he had the gun racks on it. And we're just going, what sort of police? You kick a duck here and you're dead. It was.
Yep. Yep.
Yes. They take it seriously in Rhode Island, the ocean state.
We don't have much else. We've got the bay.
And
a beautiful bay at that.
Everything else. We're going to get onto the team in a sec, but I do want to pick on Michelle one more time in terms of around the wind energy piece. I really want to know more about that. And then the other thing, just while I am picking on you, I noticed a big engagement ring on your finger, Michelle. You're a non-sailor. You're a non-sailor. Are you at least marrying a sailor?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
No.
Well, it was
and
lovely talking to you, Michelle.
I live in Newport, so I'm like, this is like so bad. All my secrets are coming out.
Now, here to talk to us about the wind energy thing, because one thing sailors do really well, like we know how to actually generate power, because if you live on a boat, you know, you've got the solar panels, you've got the wind generator, and obviously you can run a fuel generator. Talk to us about your expertise there. I'm just interested. Just give us a few minutes on that.
Yeah, I worked for many years on siting the only offshore wind energy we have in the United States right now, which is in Rhode Island. And I did my graduate research on offshore wind energy, which was all about Europe. And it represents a huge potential for the US. Mm. And it's just now starting to be developed off of Rhode Island and Massachusetts along the East Coast. And what is so wonderful about Rhode Island is that they recognized that clean energy is something that we need to pursue and is so important to address climate change, but you need to do it in a way that takes into account the important marine and natural resources there, as well as human uses. So recreational boating and sailing and fishing, like all of that is important too. And so they took the time to create a whole policy and stakeholder process where all of those things were taken into account, birds and whales and turtles and sailing routes and shipping channels and all of that. And to identify like, where does it make sense to put this offshore wind farm? And the one in Rhode Island is small. It's a demonstration project, but now there are much larger projects going on throughout the region. It's super exciting. And, you know, I think it's so important that we make this transition to clean and renewable energy. And offshore wind, I think, is going to be in our future.
So they don't cause cancer?
No.
Sadly, no. Everything else does, but not wind farms.
As was alleged by a certain person. It's interesting. Obviously, we had the boatyard facility in Portugal, and Portugal doesn't have many natural resources, just a lot of lovely people. And they generate all their own energy now. They literally nothing, every piece of energy in Portugal is sustainably provided. So there's nothing dug out of the ground. It's all solar or wind or whatever. So that's cool. All right, well, I think we need to get into the race team. I want to just talk about what's happening with, we are sailors. We want to know, are you building a new boat?
There is a new boat under build.
Mm-hmm. Who's designed it? What's it going to do? Are you looking at the Vendée, wondering whether we should have gone and done the Vendée, you know, all this sort of stuff?
Well, that was, so, you know, it's a Verdier design boat. It's interesting. The Vendée is obviously a huge part of the Imoca world. However, Mark and Charlie, who I've known since I can't even tell you when, Charlie's dad is my dentist. Now Charlie's brother is my kid's dentist. That's how long that goes back. You know, we had talked about shorthanded sailing, and to be, you know, perfectly blunt, and they might kick me for saying this, there is no way in the world they were ready to do a Vendée right now. The whole purpose of getting the boat we had was, you know, get the feet wet, proverbially speaking, learn what they can learn, do as much sailing as possible, design a new boat, start the ocean race in 21. Well, the world has evolved and changed a little bit.
Yeah.
So we postponed the race. You know, that's left some more opportunities. So this cycle of Ande never would have fit. You know, we had bandied about, do we have somebody else do it? You know, Charlie sailed the TJV with Pascal last year, and that went great. You know, but before, pre-COVID, it was timing doesn't work out. We need the boat. We want to sail, because that was the best way to immerse into that world. And that's why they set up camp in France to really learn rather than do it separate. You know, in the U.S., the culture is just not there. We don't have, you know, the background, the infrastructure. It was the best way to learn. So I do think now, I talked to Charlie this morning, and he is totally glued to the Vendée Tracker. I think part of him wishes he was doing it. I wouldn't be shocked. I really wouldn't be shocked if in 4 years' time we're talking about, I can't believe we just sent Charlie off saying, or Mark. Yeah. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked. I think he'd be crazy, but you know, yeah, maybe in a good way. So yeah, so the we're still forging forward with the original plan. You know, the delay I think might be a blessing in some ways. Hopefully, it'll lead to a stronger race, you know, with more teams. And you know, I think for us, it gives more sailing time. We are going to try to do more Amoca sailing next year. We will be launching a boat, I think. By the way, if any of this stuff is off the record, sorry, Charlie.
We know most of this anyway.
Our listeners.
We're, you know, the boat launches, I think, in June, and then, you know, to do as much sailing on that. It's every boat that's launched seemingly in the Amoca world and every set of foils that's out is an exponential leap. It's really exciting sitting in any of the design meetings of, wow, this is new. You know, everything is, it makes the boat better and faster, and, you know, and it's just exciting. There's an energy to it that I think the last iterations of the Volvo Ocean Race were great, but it was missing that development piece a bit. Mm. And it is a really nice, exciting, hard nut to crack, you know, thing that I think as a fan of ocean racing, it'll be cool to watch, you know, and more crew will push the boats. But the single-handed guys have done a pretty good job of getting these boats and getting the class really solid. So,
well, or you could just sail the boat like Jean Le Cam, and just
just like, it's crazy, right? It's
just
to me,
just go the best route.
Route with all the sails up all the time.
Yeah.
All right, so.
So who makes up the team? Obviously, Mark and Charlie.
Mark and Charlie, Rob Grenau, Kyle Langford, and they're still trialing another crew member. You know, I think that especially with another year, it's going to be sailing and Simon Fisher. Excuse me. And you know, just trialing different combinations. I mean, I think the way the boats are designed, they never were designed for as many people as they're going to be sailing.
That's, with Greenhill and Langford, you're going to break everything.
Yeah, but maybe that's a good thing, you know. And they just did a really good trip back across. You know, COVID, I'm not going to blame COVID for anything, but it did make this year really difficult because couldn't get into France. And we've got, you know, everyone's got a different passport and there are different rules, and, you know, and it's just the simplest things. We had, you know, before the boat came back to the U.S., getting Americans in, there were four Americans that flew over, and all of them had a completely different experience in getting into France. And that's just the world we're in. So it's the simplest stuff. Even if they wanted to do the Vendée, they couldn't have done it. You know, even if in May we said we're going to do it, they couldn't even go sail a boat.
Yeah,
which is a side effect.
Crazy. So, what's success for the sailing team? What's the success thing?
You know, I say it tongue in cheek, but our primary objective is to win. Like we're not, you know, a good showing is great and yada yada, but you know, the intent is to win, and that's twofold. Like I think it's not right to go into a sporting event at a certain level and not have that expectation and not try to do things the right way. And second off, I do think that, you know, if the team is able to win one of these major events, like the Ocean Race or, you know, a TJV or something, the platform that they have gets bigger. And then, you know, the ability to continue that and grow. Our objective isn't do this race and then find something else. The objective is to build a little bit more sustainability into this type of racing. You know, everybody always says this about the US, but, you know, grow it more in the United States, because it's not really part of the culture as much, certainly as it is in France and Europe and where you guys are. It's just, it's not really the style of racing that happens here. And there hasn't been a halo project, and we want to sort of change that. And then, you know, in a great world is one of the fourth grade kids that go to Sail Newport that never, ever, ever would have gone sailing, you know, 10 or 15 years time, they have an involvement with our team, their own team, some maritime thing that they were inspired by going on the boats, you know. And I think that that's something we as a sailing community take for granted. You know, we geek out on boats, but we're like, we're always too cool for school. Oh, I've seen this. They could have done this a better way, but they're still freaking cool. I mean, they're just amazing things that, you know, kids respond to in a totally different, honest way. And that inspiration piece, I think, would be a great success if, again, 10 or 15 years when you guys are on, you know, the senior tour of bar karate, are able to say, hey, remember that time we talked about that 15 years ago? Well, that kid is now winning, you know, the transatlantic race or something. You know, I think that that's something that's really aspirational, but it is an objective long term, and it's something we want to build culturally here in town. And it goes hand in hand with winning. The better they do, the better chance that has.
Well, I think with the sailing team, which are secured now, you couldn't get much of a better team between, as far as experience, the only thing I guess that is lacking is the sailing, IMOCA experience of the likes of the French for that matter, but there's a lot of sailing going on, and they're going to learn to sail those sorts of boats as fast as they can.
Yeah.
I mean, the likes of Rob and Sci-Fi and Kyle, and I mean, the experience of Charlie now, third time round, Charlie and Mark, I wouldn't say there's no excuse for not going for the top of the podium, but anything less would be a bit of a disappointment, I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the expectations are, and it's not, you know, it's a known thing. It's not being unrealistic. And, you know, even with Mark and Charlie, you know, our first go around when they were first after the Morning Light thing approach for sponsorship, this is 2011. And it was like, no, you guys aren't ready. You're just not there. You don't have enough experience, and it's not something we want to invest in. So we bought them. I literally just looked at this email today, freeze dried from a company called Mary Jane Foods, which is based on the West Coast here in the US, that has biodegradable packaging. So we said, we'll give you X amount of dollars. You buy all the freeze dried so that you can talk about that. And that was like, you know, not even a rounding error now in what the Imoca campaign.
Yeah, sure.
It was the first step, and it was a build on. And now after 9-10 years, we're ready to say, all right, our objective is to win. And they've gone out and hired and worked with some of the best people in the world. It's the nice thing about being early is you kind of have your pick of people that,
absolutely,
you know, and that was another reason why we wanted to get in early was, you know, the last time we had a good partner in Vestas, I don't think we could have asked for a better, you know, co-title sponsor.
Yep.
We learned a lot. We had a lot of good, bad, and ugly in the last race.
Yep.
That's fair. You know, I think that framed who, Mark and Charlie are now, you know, and it's, they're still pretty young. But their ability to do a campaign like this, I'm really confident in because of, you know, the building blocks that they've set forth.
Well, and also the experience that they gained, especially that last race with the tragedy and dropping the stick and all those sorts of things, and the logistics that are required. Like everyone who sees the sailing side, that's, you know, 2-3% of the race.
My God, sailing is easy.
Yeah, that's the easy bit. Dealing with all the other stuff is... And especially, I mean, Charlie sitting up there as one of the youngest skippers in the race ever, alongside some of those real experience, it could be pretty intimidating, but he certainly held his place. There's no doubt about that.
Mm. Yeah, I think we're really happy with the group that we've got. And this is really important, but they're very genuine on the ocean health side of things. Like Charlie's invested in it. Michelle earlier talked about a electric coach boat, like that came through Charlie, you know, and Mark's really involved with issues in Hawaii. You know, it's something that's ingrained in them. It's part of the, like, you know, I don't want to sound like the old man on the sea here. I'm only 45 years old, but generationally, they're just enough behind me where it's part of who they are. You know, they're not, and they're trying to represent that. And that's long term, especially from a sponsorship standpoint, that's what you're investing in. You're investing in people because there's plenty of really good sailors. But it's people that you can trust that are going to represent your values and perform at the same time and be diligent about like the, you know, the accounting and there's a trust factor that's really important. And both of them have that, and they've hired people that share those same values, and that culturally speaking, and I think you guys know this, teams, they need to share a common goal if they're going to be successful. All successful teams in sailing have that same, you know, shared vision of things and how they're going to operate.
For sure. We do wish them, well, over the coming times and with the delayed start to and leading into the new boat, getting that on the water, that's going to be super exciting. But they're going to get plenty of sailing done, and it's going to create some pretty good stories, I reckon.
I think so.
Yep. Hey, Michelle, what we talked about success for the sailing team. What is success for the foundation side, your side of things? What's success for you?
Well, even related to the sailing team, I mean, we touched on it briefly, but this legacy grant program that will be done through the team, everywhere they go, they're going to be leaving a legacy. And that means leaving the community that they sail to and stay at a little bit better than when they started. So I think that's like just an amazing thing to look back at. And I talk with Mark and Charlie a lot about how giving back, like these legacy grant programs are so meaningful. Like it's great to have like this winning campaign, but it's also really rewarding to know that you're helping to improve ocean health and the sustainability in coastal communities and educating people and just being part of the solution. I think that's really rewarding. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, just more broadly for the grant program, that we have, there's so many issues to tackle. I mean, success would be that one day, you know, our grant funds aren't needed anymore. But unfortunately, I think, you know, we're so far off from that. Mm-hmm. But if we can inspire people to know that their individual actions, their behavior change collectively does have an impact, it does matter. And so if we can inspire people to care and to do what they can to change, that would be success.
Well, you're already doing that, so that's an easy one. so congratulations. The last point I have ties back to my introduction, and probably, Rob, this is maybe one for you to answer. When you had that conversation with Wendy, and I forgot the other co-founder's name, so I'll...
Jeremy Potchman.
With Jeremy, the conversation was not about setting up... This goes for if you're looking to set up your own team and how to get the sponsorship funds. That first conversation was not about winning a sailing race. That first conversation was about the message that you wanted to get out. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was about trying to find a way to have a paradigm shift in behavior. That's really what it is. It's we are creating the issues. We can solve the issues. That's really what it is.
So every kid there putting your sponsorship package together and trying to work out how to build your team, the conversation is about understanding the people that you're going to. You know, sometimes they just do not care about the result. It's about trying to get your message out, and that's where the whole thing started. But obviously, as you said during the whole piece, success means you're able to spread the message further.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just trying to tie that piece together so people understand that, you know, the way we discussed this, there was a purpose to it. You know, we were trying to get to this sort of outcome.
Yeah, we're trying to get somewhere. And I think that, you know, we've been asked for funding requests or sponsorship dollars forever. And it's great. And it feels really good that people want to, you know, share a message or engage and talk about ocean health. But I think it's really important to have a vision even if it's a crazy vision of what it is that goes beyond just the race. And I think that if people are pitching sponsorships, they have to make the people are talking to believe that they believe in their own vision. And I think that that's a little bit missing in the sponsorship side from, and you can tell when people believe it and you can tell when people are just given the same sponsorship deck to the same companies and they're just changing your name. And, you know, I think it's important to really believe in what you're selling and or what you're trying to get out of it. And it is more than just the race. The race is a tool, you know, it's a tool chest. It's not the end goal.
Yep. And something that's been done successfully the last couple of rounds, and we hope it's going to continue. It's and I think hopefully this to our listeners is just bringing that little bit of awareness. But finally, one last question from my side. What today can just your local yachty do to make that difference?
You know, for me, it's look around and say, what little thing can I do in my own house so that I'm being genuine about it? And then acknowledging the stuff that we're doing wrong and not feeling either ashamed or guilty about it. And if people question it, you know, we're building a race boat. Yeah, that has a carbon impact. We're trying to do it in a different way. We're investigating tools. Just say, hey, I could do this better. We can all do this better.
Yep. Hear, hear. I like it.
All right. Well, team, I think that's been a highly rewarding discussion from our end. We really enjoyed catching up with you guys. Hopefully you had a good time as well. But, yeah, thanks for joining us here on Barcarati, and we'll look forward to – I suspect that we might come back in a few years and sort of revisit.
Maybe just finally, where can – what's the best way people can follow or see you, check your platforms?
I guess there's a thing called social media. I don't know. It's 11th Hour Racing Team, is where the team is. And then, we're 11thhourracing.org. You know, and if people have grant ideas or sponsorship ideas, please, you know, contact us. Our information is on there. We're always open to hear, you know, most of the best solutions start with conversations somewhere. Yeah, right. So
yeah. I'll tell you what, we'll add the links to our website when we put, whilst the episode's up and running.
Yep.
So if anyone wants to check it out, just go to our website and take a look.
Mm.
Inspiring stuff.
And
actually, can we all drink beer together next time?
Eh?
Can we all drink beer together next time?
Bit of sailor's lager.
We'll send some sailor's lager up.
Actually, hang on. One final question, Michelle, while I'm picking on you. I've picked on you the whole thing. Do you drink beer?
I do. I can at least admit to that.
Uni student. Well, far from a student now, but yeah, that's part of the culture, right?
It was part of the hiring process.
Oh, okay. Wait till you get a taste of the Barcarati Sailor's Lager. It's people like it.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going gangbusters. Harkin ordered a crate load, like a full crate. And as soon as we can get past all the legal stuff, they're getting it's like 80 cakes.
Yeah, pallet off. Pallet.
Are you shipping it to Wisconsin or Newport?
Well, Mark Wiss has been onto us, and then Bill Goggins has been onto us. So we're basically taking bribes for exactly moment, where it'll end up.
Well, I'm just going to throw this out there. Harkin's in the building that I've got here where the loft is, and the easiest way for me to give it a taste would be to
finish. We'll see what we can do.
No. Cool. All right, team. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shel.
Great.
Thanks. Super interesting discussion, my man.
What?
It's cool stuff. And I mentioned it throughout during the interview, but and having kind of been on a few different 11th hour journeys along the way, it's nothing to be scared about. It's actually something to embrace. And, I mean, we're going to continue building boats. We're going to continue, you know, putting boats on trucks to move places. And one thing that they're certainly not is ramming any of these ideologies down your throat to say you can't do that. What's it about is just finding a solution which is slightly better than what already exists. And if that keeps going along the way, like those 1 degrees, as Rob mentions, we're going to have a better world. And let's face it, the life is our ocean, the ocean.
Yep.
And we need to protect it. And if we didn't have the ocean, we wouldn't have Barkrati Sailor's Lager, because that's what Barkrati Sailor's Lager is all about also. So it all ties together.
Beautifully. Yeah, I appreciate them taking time. It's a pretty serious thing. And from a young person there trying to pull a team together, I think the gist of it is that how you approach a sponsorship is not just about going sailing. That's sort of the message, you know.
And actually not only just about a team trying to pull a team together, even pulling events together.
Yeah.
I know they have guidelines on events and all those sorts of things, so check them out on their platforms, of which will be up on our website.
Mm. Yeah, good work. Any secret pro news, my friend?
Oh, absolutely, but I can't tell you. I've sworn to secrecy.
What?
It pains me, but it's close to home. So
okay. Yeah. Well, just tell me.
We got all right. So on when? No.
hey. Moving on. So last week we mentioned the Longest Wave, Robbie Nash's film.
Yep.
It's the story of a quest to master the world's longest wave, unexpectedly reveals his vulnerabilities as a competitor, mentor, and a father. So what that's alluding to is that it's a bit of an exploration. It's not just a windsurfing film or a stand-up paddleboard film. It's a real study of the guy. As we know, we chatted to Robbie in episode 45. He mentioned it was coming down. And that's why we're plugging it, because, you know, we're sort of tied in with Robbie and we like the bloke.
Well, we have a big band of loyal followers who
love him.
Essentially grew up being inspired by Robbie as well. So.
Absolutely. So the good news, listeners. Now, obviously, this is Australia and New Zealand people only, because they haven't been able to release the film in other parts of the world. So if you are a Barkrati listener in Australia or New Zealand, can I suggest you watch the preview? And if you want to, send us a story about you that correlates to the experience that Robbie has. So something interesting and funny, or interesting and wow. Something that we can actually, if you don't want to be read out, then tell us you don't want it to be read out, but something interesting that correlates. So go to the website, which is thelongestwave.com, where you can find out all the information. Have a look at the preview, or you can look on our website. We've got the preview there. On our Facebook page, we've got the preview there. And we are giving away.
Is this our first giveaway?
This is genuinely happening. We are giving away 5 double passes to the best story. So we get to pick, boys.
Fantastic.
So you know how to influence.
I'm looking forward to reading yours. Oh, this one time I was in robe at the Wave Sailing Championships, and I just got barreled on my windsurfer, and then I just got knocked down and just held down for hours. It felt like hours and hours.
No, that was Marimbula. So that's exciting news for us. I think for the listeners, more so, I'm not sending in a story because I can't win a ticket. So 5 double passes. It can be to any of the cinemas that are in Australia and New Zealand showing the event.
Hoyts, right?
It's the Hoyts Cinemas.
Yep.
Go to the websites, check it out. But just send us a story. So send it to us at cheers@barkrati.com. Cheers, as in cheers when you're having a drink. @barkrati.com, or you can send it to us on the messages on Facebook. Messenger. But reach out to us, send us a message, and we will pick 5 people to get double passes, and the tickets will be waiting for you at the door. Like when you walk up, you'll walk up to the ticket counter and say,
VIP, get your chocolate pass. Ice cream, get your popcorn, pick up your ticket.
Yeah, we're not paying for your chocolate ice cream or your popcorn though.
Yeah, $12.80 for a choc top. Thanks.
But so that's good news. So get onto it. Thanks to the release people for reaching out to us. They're keen to be part of the Barker 80 experience. So that's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's going to be inspiring. I mean, you look at the, you watch the trailer, and it will be an inspiring story. So, do it.
Mm. Now, America's Cup. Wow, things are happening in the America's Cup. Did
not
you?
Not only things are happening now; they start racing in a month's time.
I know. Do you know that? I reckon that'd be the hardest part about doing the Vendée. Like, you'd be racing around, like you'd be going down the Southern Ocean. A month, yeah, you should still be in the Southern Ocean in a month. And the America's Cup will start, and you'll be wanting, like, maybe I'll hang up a little bit closer to have a look, sort of thing. Yeah,
what's all this bandwidth being used on the internet? Everyone's watching it online.
It's crazy. Did you see the second boat from Team New Zealand? Their pictures, literally, we're recording Friday morning, Australia time. So, literally, the pictures, it got launched last night.
Just got rolled out, and I've got to say, probably a bit of a love child of the Poms, I would imagine.
You reckon?
Probably a little more aggressive in some areas, like in the bow sections.
Mm.
But that slab sided thing, and if anyone's going to walk straight off the back of the boat, they're going to do it on this one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't see too many people transferring sides. Obviously, only one or two do on these setups currently, but even just the one running across, it's going to be a bit crazy. But Pete Burling.
But a phenomenal, like, that shape in the bow, and obviously going for that skeg type setup, which is similar to what we saw with the Ben Ainslie's team. So they're kind of closer together, those two now.
Amazing. And the boat, it just looks crazy. It's such a good looking thing. It's crazy looking thing, you know, even little scallops in here. And it kind of looks like a windsurfer board, you know, an extreme windsurfer board from the slalom sort of world.
With all the cutouts and everything in it. I was just imagining, I mean, the boat builders are just hard at it, right? Building the boats. And imagine they then go to start cutting out the splashes. What the splashes look like?
You reckon
the boat sits in? Be like, what the? What's going on here?
Maybe Timbo just got it wrong, and that's how he did it. So Tim.
So they designed off the splash.
For Timbo is one of our mates who's a boat builder for Team New Zealand. I would love to get him on the show, but I don't think he's allowed to talk at the moment. So,
phenomenal looking thing. It is now feels real. Like, it's getting exciting. A month away from some actual racing. The boats look reliable. The boats look super quick, super cool. They've sorted out the mess with the courses. So, yeah, standing by.
See, Matt Sheehan, our mate in England, wrote the skeg thing was about end plate effect. That was his theory on it.
Okay.
So Matt, for those who don't know, he's obviously, most people would know Matt. He's got the TV show. He's an editor or part of Yachting World, and we know him really well. He loves his sailing, but he loves hang gliding.
Yeah.
So he's really, really into the gliding, and so the aerodynamics elements, he's all over, and he's just pouring across those boats, and he's in New Zealand now, and so he's got his ear to the ground. So I just thought that was an interesting discussion. So, really interesting.
I haven't seen when they're due to go yachting, but I'm guessing it's going to be pretty soon.
That boat, yeah. It's as soon as it gets its mast up, she'll be up and away. It should be a ton of fun. I'm excited about the America's Cup. I'm disappointed we haven't got the barge over there. I feel that COVID has killed us in that way. But, you know.
Well, we've got till March, right, for the match. Yep. So.
Yep. Yep.
Might start heading over in the tinny now. Might need a bit of fuel.
Cool. Vendée obviously is underway. So as I said, Friday morning as we're recording this. So I think the first seven or so teams have just crossed the equator. So at the moment, as we're looking at Alex is in front, Alex Thompson, Tom Arriont on linked out in second, very close. They're all very close. Charlie Dallin on Apivia. So the two boats that we've had a bit of involvement in are right there. Bicey, well, you've had more than the tiniest bit of involvement that we've got passionately supporting. Jean Lacombe, just...
Oh, mate.
Unreal. Unreal.
How's it going?
It's going to start to hurt him soon, like the lack of foils, but just sailing like a genius. And then Kevin Escoffier is right there as well.
Just a quick shout out. The episode we did with Marcus immediately after, forgot to mention Kevin as as a contender, which is true. But, yeah, I mean, they're smoking along in the trades now, and Alex is just sitting a little further out west. Mm. So with the idea to get that little slingshot around the bottom. And then slowly they start turning, pretty much heading due south now, and slowly they start cranking it around, ready to take on the Southern Ocean.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is that if you look at the modelling and you run some of the routing, you can either, at the moment, there's quite a split. You can either go hard west. There's a little bit of a low pressure sitting there. You can go hard west, or you can sort of cut down the middle along that ridge line that runs down through the St. Helena area there, the St. Helena sort of high that sits there. There's a little ridge line where hot air and cold air meet. So you can either sort of cut at the corner a little bit or go right down along the coast of Brazil out right out west and then come around. And there's about an 8-hour difference. Now, I sound like I really know what I'm talking about there, but I will say that if you are English-speaking, which pretty much our whole audience is, we don't get much coverage from the French guys because we don't speak French. But Boris Herman, who is probably one of – I think he was probably our first guest on the show.
He was our first, actually.
And great bloke. He is doing a power of work to – if you're not following Boris Herman, follow him, because he is doing some really good stuff off the boat. Like he is – he's doing lots of talks, lots of videos. He's got his home base team putting up stuff. That routing stuff came from his team. I caught that this morning.
Yep.
So make sure that you are following Boris. And he's a great bloke, it's just as an aside. So he's currently sitting seventh in his rebuilt boat.
Another good way to follow it is Conrad Humphreys is doing a little piece, and he gets a guest on every day and they talk about what's happening for the day, whether it's Dee Kafari or he had Moose the other day.
Yeah.
That's certainly worth a look as well. So best way to find him is at Conrad Humphreys on Twitter, and that'll take you to the platform that he's using.
And I'm sure he'll be giving us love as well.
Yeah, I've sent him a merchandise pack to have him prepared.
Obviously, there's some disappointment. So Jeremy Bayou is back and underway, miles behind, 2,500 miles behind. So that's...
Did you see, obviously, coming into the race as the favourite, and he got back to Le Sable d'Olonne and see the sheer disappointment on his face. Mm. I mean, it's 2 years of just solid, even more actually, of just everything thrown at this, and to hit something, damage the rudder system. But he's up and running again. The team got him back out there, and that's part of the rules. You're allowed to go back to Le Sable d'Olonne and your shore crew are allowed to work on the boat without any sort of penalties. And he's back out there. It must be pretty demoralising starting more than a week behind.
Absolutely. Of course, Armel Trippon on La Occitane still, he had to divert a little bit. But the other one that's happened is Nicolas Troussel on Corum Epargne. I can't even do it.
Corum.
On Corum, thank you.
Yeah.
Lost the mast.
Dropped the stick. Mm. Yep. That'd tear your trousers, Troussel.
So
he's now landed in Cape Verde Islands. And I saw a picture of the boat just going, heading in there. Utter disappointment, I must say. But let's face it, out of the 32 starters, we'll probably only see 20 at the finish line. And that stuff like this happens, it's going to continue down.
The other thing, of course, is the interesting thing is Gene LeCam, he lent his boat to Nicholas whilst the Coram was getting built, and it was racing around as Coram for a while. So
maybe he's given it a little turbo.
Yeah, well, all the sails and stuff, like part of the charter fee was a whole new set of sails for the race for Gene. So so I think he's pretty good mates with Nicholas as well. So, yeah, bit crazy.
No, it's cool. And then, we've only got one really down at the moment, which is Nicholas. The rest are still going hard. It's probably pretty simple for the time being. Yeah. But when you look at all the footage coming off the boats, like they're sailing in probably, 14, 15 knots, but they are still sending it.
Absolutely.
Sending it, absolutely.
Yeah.
The foot is down.
Good times. Can't wait. Anyway, so they're doing the dream stuff, as you say, like trade wind sailing is what everyone dreams about. Obviously, trade wind sailing and these things bashing about, getting smashed about is probably a different sort of kettle of fish, but they're out there having a good time and we're happy.
Hear, hear.
Mm.
Well done, boys and girls.
All right. I reckon that's the show.
Nothing left?
Nothing left? You got anything?
No, that's about it.
A little bit of breaking news. I'm just going to cut in. As I was publishing this episode, the news came out from the Hugo boss that Alex Thompson has had to slow the boat down. He's about 800 nautical miles off Brazil, off Rio. And if you've been watching the tracker closely like we all are, you suddenly, they're all fanging along, linked out, and Apivia and Hugo boss were striding out in front of the field. And Hugo boss just suddenly slowed down, so he knew something was going on. The story is that he's got some structural damage. He's in touch with his team, and they're trying to work out what's going on. So, you know, if you're not familiar, you'll know he'll have a whole element of repair materials on the boat, and they're actually going to try and – they'll obviously try and work out if they can do the repairs, what they can do. So they'll be running through that whole process right now. He'll keep the boat slow. He'll just – there's a little bit of a light wind section just right to the east of him. He'll probably drive into that a little bit just to find smoother seas. But, yeah, the boats were absolutely fanging, devastating. There's a lot of our top boats going out, and at the moment it is looking very much like – Tomar Riont on Linked Out and Charlie Dallin are going to be there too. And, of course, they're the two boats that we were sort of sweating on. So it is interesting. It is interesting. We were sweating on them because we're there for the design of that one. No disrespect to Hugo Boss or their team at all, meant by that statement. So, yeah, best of luck to everyone. And, Alex, I hope you get it back up and going. And, wow, what a race this is turning out to be.
Cool. Nice, mate.
All right.
Been a pleasure. Farewell to the listeners. Enjoy the cool yachting which is going on and which is coming up.
Yeah, good work. See everyone.